I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Three, two, one, and we are rolling with a metronome on.
Are you checking it or?
I'm checking in.
I'm flipping and reversing it. What are you saying?
I'm putting my credit card details down and I'm ordering off the late night menu, baby.
Ow, that hurt. Come on, slow down.
You're getting a toasty at 2 a.m. What you know about that?
What are you saying, man?
Good G.
Yeah, yeah.
Been gymming that.
Come on. Man's looking whiz-nedged.
Trust it.
Yeah, I'm trying.
Yeah, try.
What you got there? Was that a little CBD or THC? What are we dealing with? A little hybrid?
Yeah, a little hybrid situation. Nice. It's pretty much a CBD zoo with a drop of hash, but like modern hash, grey man hash, the best hash, and then a bit Cali shit for the taste.
Got you.
Not for the intenseness.
Yeah. Someone else that I don't know whether blazes anymore or not
I think he does.
Okay. is our guest.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, that's a good link, man.
Yeah, thank you, man. Yeah.
No problem.
Today's guest is someone very special.
Oh, again. Yeah. Of course.
Well, I always line them up for you, boy. Yeah.
Thank you.
Someone who's quite literally the reason we do this podcast, because we went on his together and realized we actually quite like chatting shit to each other. And. Yeah. You know,
that's true.
In tribute to him, he made it a very enjoyable affair.
He did, yeah.
Someone whose work we've been fans of for years. And also someone who Hugo looked up to quite literally because he's much taller than just Hugo, not me.
Yeah.
Well,
it's your hunch.
I wrote this, so just let me.
I know, but you got the hunch.
When I straighten my back, I'm his size, okay?
Yeah.
But he's a god in the vaping community. Yeah,
he is. Vape God.
If I was to say to you, hate thy neighbor, you'd say,
love thy friend.
Okay. And if I was to say to you, shut down fucking live stand-up shows internationally, you'd then say,
oh, I think I know you're talking about.
Yeah. And if I was to say it's your lucky day then, baby boy, because we've got him right now on the show, you'd say thank you. I'd say you're welcome.
Yeah.
And then I'd go, you've guessed it, you clever little fuck. It's Jamali Maddox.
Come on.
This is nothing more than an intro.
Yo.
Jamali.
Does this sound good?
Man, like Jamal X.
I used to go by Jamali X when I first started comedy.
Yeah. Sick.
I was really deep in shit. I was like, yeah, Jamali X.
Yeah.
I like that.
That's like when I first did my first show, like Jamali X.
Yeah.
Like you've got like, if you like do something, a suit comes around your face as well. You tend to a bit of a Marvel situation.
Yeah. I'm more thinking of the fact that it's still the tail end of Wu-Tang influence, isn't it?
There was a lot of me calling people God.
Yeah.
And a lot of me learning lessons and stuff. Listen, I had a weird phase. You know what I'm saying? Because I went to Harlem because I was actually meant to do an episode with the 5%ers.
Mm-hmm.
But it just like, it just didn't fit because I was like, they're not like a hate group. They're just, you know, from what I knew of them. And,
yeah.
Yeah, I saw the temple and a little part of me got gassed as well. I saw like the the temple of Mecca or whatever they call
it. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Lil Palmy went, yo, I kind of want to go inside and that.
Yeah, yeah. That's the thing. For the subject of the series you're filming, it would be, it'd probably be wrong, but it would be fucking, I mean, we spoke about this before. It'd be interesting though, man, to, because like all of the East Coast, all of our favorite rappers were all a part of it in some way or another. You know, like,
yeah.
Even the fact they just influenced all slang.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, yo, what up, yes, God?
Like, yeah. But then we saw them outside our hotel. Do you remember when we were in
LA? They weren't the same. They were the ones that Jamali did interview.
Oh, they're the Israel.
The Israel.
Oh, yeah. They're great.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
They're a fucking laugh, man.
Yeah.
They're a giggle, mate. They are fucking
mad.
Giggle.
Yeah.
They were very passionate, man.
Yeah. They were, because people ask me about that show, and it's like, who was the fun? Like, the leader of that group, his name was General Yahana, right? And they all dress like these 80s wrestlers.
Yeah, they do.
They had like a big door knocker. He had this door knocker that was a kick, like a lion door knocker in his chest. Yeah. And when I see this guy, man, like, it was hard not to laugh. Because funny's funny.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
This guy said, like, he kept on calling some of my producers, they were white women, he kept on calling them Rebecca. All of them were Rebecca. He would just say the funniest shit, man. Like, he would just say, man, I say, how many times do you say white devil a day? And he goes, sometimes, Jamali, I just wake up in my house and just go, the white man's the devil. And it was just funniest. And he's like, they were like big, like massive guys. They were like 6'2" and like, like 20 stone, and they were like loud and that. Yeah. And they were fucking hilarious.
Yeah, that's amazing, man. Yeah, I love that episode. I mean, yeah, we'll get into that a bit later, but I love Take That Neighbor, man. Fucking sick.
Yeah.
How has this last year been for you, like, socially, work-wise, everything?
Weird, man. Mm. Like, I'll be honest with you, because you've got to break it down into different categories. I'll say work-wise, I've been lucky.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So I can't even really complain, because I think you kind of have to take a real perspective of work and go, okay, you know, it's you're not necessarily doing all the things that you were expecting to do or that you want to do. Mm. But there's a lot of brothers, especially in our business, that ain't got nothing right now. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, there's people I know that ain't worked in 2 years, a year.
Yeah, for sure. And especially in people that rely on live, do you know what I mean? Like, stand-up and that.
100%. Like, a lot of them guys, you know, like, I was lucky enough that, like, I have been booked for projects. We're still going ahead and, you know, so I was lucky and I worked through lockdown. So I've been all right that wise.
Yeah.
Can't really complain. And socially, man, it's hard. You know what I'm saying? Because I realize that I'm not a stay at home type of guy. Like, I leave my house at 12 in the afternoon. I don't get back to 1.
Yeah.
Like, that's just that. You know what I'm saying? I just hit the street. I walk about. I go coffee shop. My whole life is out.
I'm similar. Yeah.
So I'm just in my house and, you know, and it's sort of, you know, it's hard on the mental health. It's hard on the, you know, we're social beings and that. And I just got that, and it's just fucking, what do you do, man? I just walk around, look at a room, and just go, all right, yeah, this is that.
Yeah.
And I got an air rifle. I just sort of walk around with an air rifle.
Like that Simpsons episode where Homer has a gun and he like uses turn the lights off and shit.
Yeah. I was walking around with my fucking air rifle being an adult.
Yeah.
In your boxers.
Yeah, just in my boxers, walking around, like looking around, like, all right, they're my blinds. And sick, you know.
Yeah.
If anyone tries to take these blinds, I'm cool.
That's it, man.
I'm ready to roll.
A homemade delivery guy comes to the door, you're just there with an air rifle, boxers. What's up, man?
Going, what's up? Nothing, man. I just got a package for you. Cool, place that shit down.
Yeah.
You guys, you got a tip though. After you've done that, it will take you off the delivery. I started like enjoying dumb shit. I started enjoying walking now.
Yeah, same.
I've been going through walks. I've been walking down the canal and that.
Yeah, same. Bro, I live literally right on the canal, yeah?
Like a sort of houseboat.
No. Yo, that would be sick. Would you live in a houseboat?
I don't know, man.
I would.
You would?
My mate had one. It was all right.
Yeah, but I feel like in the summer, you're going to be roasting. It's like tin.
Not like at the life I live now, in an imaginary life, yeah.
Oh, so you mean no then?
No, I wouldn't.
You mean your reality?
Yeah.
Not in my, a life that I don't have and won't have.
Yeah.
But if I did have that sort of sick life, then yeah, why not? Like, sort of central.
I like how you got the dreams of like a 40-year-old divorced man.
Yeah. I think I was born a 40-year-old divorced man.
I would get a houseboat, like a midlife crisis.
Yeah. Houseboat, yep.
I love that. I love that. It's quite positive that your real life is better than your dreams.
I look at the houseboat and I do. I think it's like good in. I think it'll be good for like a month in July.
Yeah,
to have a party.
Yeah.
You bring your pop a couple bottles, smoke a zoo, and you'd be like, yeah, this is life
for but sure.
Then you've got to move that shit every fucking 2 minutes, and you can't. You got to get like more in, and nah, that's just not.
I think what we're all thinking, and we're on the same page. I think that we'd like to know someone that lives on a houseboat.
Use
it for a bit. Because I do think that I know exactly why you say that, because when you walk past, and especially in lockdown, they've got their little furniture out. They're all sitting there drinking, smoking, and that. They've had the best lockdown. Their social life hasn't stopped.
Yeah.
We're just walking past on our own. Love to be a part of that.
I think what I'm yearning for is their social circle.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and just sitting out on a little table and chairs.
Yeah, for sure.
I had like a little cat and that, and I was like, yo, that's a life, man. Yeah. I just realized, it's just loneliness, isn't it?
Yeah.
Who's the fact that I'm just fucking lonely now?
You've got a nice flat in East London. You know you're reaching rock bottom when you're looking at houseboats going, this ain't got a sick life.
My life is fine, bro, and I'm out here yearning to live on a boat, but I just took my priorities, man.
This is a very useful part of the show for when you need things to do. It's the recommendation part.
And then, like, obviously, we've all been in more, like we're talking about, apart from the walks. But have you got any recommendation for the people, them, of anything you've been watching, listening to, reading?
I know you've been talking about it a lot, yeah. Four Blocks.
Yeah.
Man, I've been telling everyone about Four Blocks. And when you tell people about Four Blocks, you've got to start and say, listen, it's in German, but listen.
Yeah. You're right. You're so right, bruv. You got to go, it's subtitles, but it's worth it. And there's...
They dubbed the third season.
Exact. No, you can get it with the subtitles.
I know, but I'm saying they dubbed it because they knew.
Oh, exactly, yeah. And that's exactly what I told people as well, is that there is a dubbed version, but do not do that.
Never do the dub.
No way, no. But
it's
hard, man. Like, and the sound. And did you know that Abbas and Latif, they're both like famous like rappers from Berlin?
You know, I can't remember you telling me.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I actually had to text you and say, yo.
Yeah.
I saw it on your Instagram and I was like, all right, yo. And then I watched it. I was like, yo, this is one of my favorite gangster shows I've seen in a long time.
Right, true. Yeah.
And I looked it up and I know that Latif brother and the other dude were like, legit. And the guy with no teeth.
Yeah, I think he's called Gringo. He's a sick rapper, man.
Yeah, Gringo.
Yeah.
And that really lanky brother, he was he's a wrestler.
Oh, serious?
Yeah, he's a pro wrestler,
fucking hell, yeah. Basically, we're saying they're all hard in one way or another.
Yeah, all tough dudes.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was watching it with someone and they go to me, you look like every extra. And I was like, what do you doing? And then I watched it. I was like, bro, I look like every, like, I was,
it's true.
If it was me and the cat smoking the blem, I was like, yo, that's me. Like, I could totally fit in that role.
I'm so jealous of that as well, because the extras look sick.
Yeah, I would have fully been a Four Blocks extra, bro.
100, man. Yeah.
But yeah, Four Blocks is cold. Reading wise, you know, I've been going back. I went back and I read, and it's The Man's. Eat, Laugh, Pray, or whatever the fuck that shit is. What's it called? Eat, Laugh, Pray?
I've heard
pray,
of it, laugh. But I haven't
You know,
it.
Like, the stereotypical...
Yeah.
There's a man's book like that. It's called Shantaram. You ever read Shantaram?
I've heard of it. I ain't read it.
Yeah, I started rereading that. I read that when I was young. Started rereading that.
Is that about the guy that goes to India?
Yeah.
It's a story.
He's like an armed robber who escapes prison.
Yeah.
Runs to India. That ends up being in the mafia and... Mujahideen and all of this stuff.
Yeah.
And it's about him falling in love and, you know, with like an Indian woman. And it's good. It's like,
I think,
you know,
they were going to make a film out of it, bro. Like, Johnny Depp.
Ah.
But then he went and fucked everything up, didn't he?
So. Yeah, he's a bit cancelled at the moment.
Yeah, a bit cancelling.
He won't be in a lot of projects right now.
Yeah.
Rewatching his films, I've got to close the blinds. You can't rewatch his films.
Yeah.
Like R. Kelly.
Yeah.
Although Pirates of the Caribbean's on TV quite a lot, I think because it's cheap at the moment.
What else have I been watching, man? I've just been watching like anything. I started watching like the Amazon Prime films that have been getting one star.
Yeah.
To that level now, like I watched Belly 2.
Oh, wow. Shit.
Shot of 5. And I watched, have you seen Queen of the Dance? That old Jamaican film, Queen of the Dance.
No.
In Shutters, you know the guy who plays Mad Dog?
Yeah.
And it's an old Jamaican film. It's called Queen of the Dance, And it's so low budget, but it's so like good but bad.
Yeah. Where's that? Is that on Amazon?
That's on Amazon. Oh. No. I had to stream that online.
Yeah. That's it. Okay,
yeah. Like the levels, finding it. I need to see it.
Little stream, you know what I mean? But yeah, man, that's other than that, I watched Last Chance U Basketball.
Yeah. That's on my list, man.
First episode.
It's good. It's good.
Yeah. Good.
If you like the other ones, you like that one. But
yeah,
that's all I like, really, man.
Ask. If you don't ask, boy, you don't get.
Where were you raised then?
Ilford.
And so where did it all start for you then? Was it like was your first thing wanting to be in comedy, or was it like music, or what was your like first thing as like that, you know, like when you were young?
When I was young, like I wanted to be an actor. It wasn't even really comedy.
Yeah.
It was acting, and I wasn't especially straight serious acting. I didn't have the thing for it,
right?
You know, seriousness.
Yeah.
And then I comedy was like, you know, that fool doing comedy and that. But you know, I tried to MC as well, and I was fucking awful.
Yeah, because I was gonna ask, was there like whole sort of youth club kind of scene, like everyone's into? Because you're East as well. Grime was.
Yeah. So yeah. So I grew up in So I went to Grime. So we used to go to a Grime workshop.
Yeah.
And I used to try and spit. There's a couple of videos of me on YouTube I'm trying to get
sick.
Fucking bad, man. There's one where I got this huge afro, and there's one where I had a little box top.
Yeah. Hard.
Yeah. I spit, and that was from, I must be young. I was in secondary school. So I want to say, in my head, I'm 15, but I weren't 15 because I still had the afro. So I must have been about 13, 14.
Right.
And tried to spit. And that when I knew I just wasn't good enough.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And the thing is, I don't have the ear for music.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, I've got friends that like, you know, who are producers, and they'll show me like a Jay Dilla beat. And I go, I sound sick. And they'll go, do you hear this thing here? And I go, I just don't hear it.
Yeah.
I just don't hear certain
things. Just the vibe.
I can hear good, and I can hear things I like and stuff.
Yeah.
I don't get the sort of certain intricacies. I just don't get it,
but you know? I feel like that was the era of like you were either a DJ or an MC, that it didn't really matter if you were specifically into music or not. Do you know what I'm saying?
You kind of had to be one.
Yeah.
You're not a DJ or an MC.
Yeah. What do you do?
I definitely was an MC.
Or graph.
Yeah.
I couldn't get my mumsy at them times wouldn't get me no decks and that.
How much?
I want to do so much shit, and my mum was just like, "Bro, I'm not paying for you for these whims, innit?"
Yeah. That's good. That's a good parenting.
I was like mad young when I was like 11. Yeah, I begged my mum to send me to wrestling school. I begged her, fam. I mean, I begged her, and then she goes, "No, I'm not sending you wrestling school." And I used to say to her, "You killed my dream." I'm like, mum, that's so cool to say to your mum, like, yo.
I'd love to see you go wrestling school now.
Yeah, documentary.
That would be sick. Like the WWE one.
I'll be good at the mic work, but the physicality aspect.
Yeah, for sure.
But, you know, get back to your question. I always had in the back of my head that I wanted to be a funny guy.
Yeah.
But then the idea was, and I used to watch all the stand-up, and I used to watch Paramount, and, you know, Live at the Comedy Store, and I'd watch their comedy and that.
So, like, the first thing was more kind of being a fan of it, being like, I love this.
And I think the first time I saw comedy, and I was like, I want to do whatever the fuck it is that this guy is doing.
Mm.
And you know, it's sort of like a thing where a lot of, it's sort of like, a cliche.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember I was at my dad's yard, I must have been about maybe 15, and I'm bare high at my dad's yard, and I'm watching Channel 4's 100 Greatest Comedians. Mm-hmm. I remember I'm watching it and I'm like, yeah, it's cool. And then Bill Hicks came on.
Yeah.
I remember seeing that and it changed everything. Yeah. I was like, whatever the fuck he's doing, I need to do that.
Yeah. Oh, you can do it like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't know that words could do that. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. I did. Nothing ever moved me. And it might, you know, might be because I was young and I was high and it was sort of the right age and I was sort of at that. And especially when you're smoking weed, you're kind of conspiracy and you're kind of asking.
Yeah.
And also the jokes aren't about like their mother-in-law.
Yeah. It's something else. And it was just like, and especially growing up in ends where you kind of like, you know, I love the people I grew up with, but when you sort of walk a different line or think a different way, it's kind of lonely. Mm. You know what I'm saying?
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
And so when I first saw that, I was like, yo, like, it's something that I resonate with that I felt before. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It changed everything for me. And then from that day, I needed to do whatever that was. And I didn't know how to get into it. I didn't know what that was.
Yeah.
But I needed to do that.
Yeah, because that's what interests me when it's like someone from, like, our sort of culture, like, we're sort of similar generation, similar sort of culture. Like, how is that even a possibility in someone's mind, you know? But like you say, obviously having a love for it, watching it, but how do you make that a reality?
Yeah. It seems impossible.
Yeah.
You know?
Because it's like, not as if we're surrounded by other people that's like, oh, I think his cousin was a comedian. You know, like, no.
I did not know a comedian in real life. I never met a comedian in real life.
Yeah.
I just didn't know how to even start. You know what I'm saying? And then I think I did my first show at like 16.
Wow.
You're fucking tied on my ass. Fucking really bad. And it was in Lions Den in London.
But brave though, did you just have the balls back then? Just to go, fuck it.
I think there's something that someone else said. I didn't come up with this, but you're brave once.
Yeah.
In comedy. Mm. And so that first time on stage, and then it's your decision if you're going to do it again. Do you know what I mean? Because I think anyone can do it once.
Right.
If you're willing to get back up and do it.
That's it.
But yeah, man. And I remember I went up there and it was just shit, but I just remember loving it. Mm. I mean, it doesn't matter how bad it went, I just loved it.
That's it.
It didn't put you off at all.
No.
The opposite. Well,
I didn't do it for a year after that, but that was due to, you know, personal reasons as opposed to just embarrassment, which there was partly embarrassment to it of, you know, not being good at something.
Mm. Yeah. But,
you know, and I did it again. And then from maybe like, you know, from 16, 17, when I did my first one, then from maybe 18, 19, that was just a constant in my life. It was just, you know, I just lived it. And I took like a little time off here and there because I was just fucking around being lazy. But
yeah.
When you first started though, did you, it's like, how did you even know the technique sort of aspect? As in like, did you know, oh, I've got to write something down, or I'm just going to turn up and tell funny stories, or do you know what I mean? Like, how do you even
I didn't know what the fuck to do. Yeah. I thought you just kind of turn up and just said funny things. I didn't.
Yeah. When I watched those guys, it seemed effortless. I'm going to try that.
Yeah.
It's easy. It's just chatting.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And then people, when after I come off stage, someone said to me, like, yo, you need to like write something. Like, you can't.
Okay.
And I was like, okay, cool. And then I wrote some stuff down, and then I remember I met this guy. I did this short film and I met this producer called Ayo. Mm-hmm. And I remember this brother, and this brother was mad cool. And I remember he would come to my shows and he would even like, he would send me like a message saying like, yo, I just found this show online. And I remember asking him years later, I said, why did you do that for me? And he goes, I just thought you would make it. He had no reason why, but I just believed that you could do something. You know what I mean?
Sick.
And he really... And he just used to send me stuff and he used to like always encourage me, used to come to my shows and that. And he said to me, you know, you should sit down and write some jokes. And so I wrote 5 minutes of jokes. And this was the second time I did it. Mm-hmm. I remember I was still a little bit fucked off from the first time. Yeah. He signed me up and didn't tell me.
Sick.
And he goes to me, oh, did you write some jokes? I'm like, yeah. And it went good because you're on tonight. I was like, oh. And I went on, and it didn't go too bad, actually.
Yeah,
it didn't go too bad.
And did that make you feel good? Did it make you feel like...
Yeah, man. It was just a different feeling, man. Even though I loved it the first time, the second time was I felt comfortable.
Yeah, I guess the first time is like, I've achieved trying it out. Whereas the second time is like, oh, now I'm finding my way.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's not like I felt comfortable on stage. Like, I was still fucking terrible.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I felt comfortable with the idea of being... Like, it's weird, like, internally.
Yeah, yeah.
I felt happy and I felt like something clicked and there was something that was missing in my life. Mm-hmm. And then I kind of found the thing I was missing.
Amazing, yeah.
And it really, like, changed, you know, it changed my life, really.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I think... And then I was still fucking around for a long time. I think that's one thing that people... when I ever hear people that sort of chase their dream or whatever, they was like, boom, and then I just worked hard. It's like, bro, I fucked around for a long time.
Yeah.
I don't get it twisted. I don't think it was like I've been working hard from 18. Nah.
Yeah.
But you're 18 as well. Like, yeah. you're meant to fuck around.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm nearly 30, I still fuck up.
Yeah.
I fuck up daily.
I got a script I went to hand in a week ago, bro. Like, it's just... yeah. You know what I'm saying, though? Like,
yeah, it's coming.
Yeah. But you just, it's still an ongoing process. Mm-hmm. I think that's what people lack, the understanding of it's okay to even fail once you got the thing you wanted. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. You got to keep taking risks, basically.
You got to keep taking risks, man.
Because, like, I swear, like, old comedians would have, like, a set, or I don't know what comedians call it, but like they'd have their jokes and that's it. Like, they wouldn't change it, they wouldn't edit it. They might come up with one or two, but that's it.
If we're talking about old comedians,
yeah,
if we're talking about the comedians, so this is pre-80s alternative.
Mm-hmm.
This is like your Bernie Mannings, your fucking...
Yeah, I was gonna say, it's a whole different vibe though, that shit, wasn't it?
But they would still each other's jokes.
Oh, so they'd
be a whole board of jokes.
Yeah.
One of them would say, nah, he did that joke tonight.
Yeah.
You got to do another.
Yeah.
So they would just have a list of jokes, sort of like pub jokey type things.
Yeah. Because that's what they were, right? They were like compares of like the working...
Yeah, it used to be like them, then a stripper.
Phoenix Nights type vibe. It's
essentially like the Pina Manar of the drum and bass world.
Yeah.
Peanut, I swear that's Shabba's. Yeah, but that's mine. That's Skibbers. That's Shabba's. That's all everyone's lyrics. Yeah.
It's not, but you still get that in comedy. I mean, comedy just evolves, but you still get that. Like, you still get the, you know, there's a line that every comedian, there's some lines that are so bait, everyone can kind of use them. Like
a trend.
If you're doing crowd work and there's an actor and you say, oh, so you work in Starbucks. Like, that's...
Yeah.
That's been done. Oh, so, yeah. But you can't own that.
No.
Yeah.
Some of our best work.
Yeah. So that was, but you know, when people ask me when did I really, really start and get into it, I remember it was about 22 is when I really said to myself, this is me now. Mm-hmm. This is my life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm going to do it.
Yeah, other than that, I was fucking about
it. And does that mean you're starting at that point to earn money off it and you can focus more time on it, or you're still doing whatever else you need to do to get by and just putting your all into that?
No, I remember when I first didn't make money from comedy from, like, say that 17 to when I touched stage.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you how much I made for, like, maybe the first 5 years, I made like 40 quid. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Bit of petrol money.
Yeah. I didn't. Yeah. And even like, I started making money from comedy like when I was 23 is when I went full time.
Yeah.
And even then, bro, I was making maybe 17,000.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, and that's me being honest. Yeah. Like, I think I made like maybe even less than that, bro.
Yeah.
Be honest, probably I think 70,000 was a lot. I think I made maybe 10,000.
Yeah, that's what I was getting. Yeah. I was signing on all year and I was getting paid the same. Like, that's the mad thing. Yeah. That is the mad thing though, like on the books.
Yeah, but bro, I made fucking... I remember I used to be so broke. I mean, one time I was so broke, all I could afford was a butter bagel from Brick Lane.
Bruh, man, fuck it there.
I had no money to... Yeah. I had to bump the train
to
get a butter bagel.
Yeah, no.
That's how mad it was, bruv. I was broke. I remember, like, and then I moved to Manchester. And that's when after I left Manchester, because there was like, I don't know if you heard the story, but I was at uni.
Yeah.
And I said to myself,
what were you studying at uni, by the way?
Oh, because I'll give you the backstory to that.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of leads and you might like the story. Mm-hmm. So basically, I had done uni once and I dropped out, and I was sort of dropping out because I wanted to do comedy, but I was fucking around. I went London there, mm-hmm. and it was the worst university in England. They kicked me out. And then I went to Manchester because my mum said, either you get a real job or you go uni again. So yeah. I said, I'll go
fucking uni.
I'm,
yeah, sweet.
Yeah.
Party for fucking year, right?
Yeah.
And the reason I went Manchester was is because I thought to myself, okay, I can go uni. I was doing acting with comedy practice.
Okay.
And I thought to myself, I'll get a degree. I'll live in Manchester and whatever, whatever, right? And as I was living in Manchester, I started getting gigs in London. So I was coming back every weekend and I was using the money I was making from the weekends to pay for the train. So I was not even breaking even. Mm-hmm. I was really losing money. And I was fucking around. And then in the class, there was a stand-up portion of the year. Oh. On your third year, you did stand-up. And I remember I did the third years did their stand up in the class, and then they brought in Jason Manford.
Okay, yeah.
Oh wow.
To come say, hey, change this and that.
Yeah,
and then
yeah.
Jason said, any of the first years do stand up and they want to show me, and then I can give them some pointers. And then I went up and I did like maybe 4 minutes. And then Jason just looked at me and he said to me, he goes, you know, I'll be honest with you, bruv. He goes, just quit uni, man. He goes, just go be a comedian, like, stop fucking around.
Sick.
Like, In front of him, he goes, there's nothing I can tell you, bro. He goes, you're a comedian. Stop fucking around. Like, and I was like, damn, man. All right, cool.
Had you met him previously?
No, I never met the guy. Never met the guy. In my
wow. life.
And he never saw me before. And he just saw, I just did a little form.
And you hadn't paid him anything?
No, I paid him nothing.
I saw him on Stand Up To Cancer. And he was a G with the person he was coaching. Like his pointers and stuff were amazing. Like
he's a craftsman, man. People look at mainstream guys and go like, oh, blah, blah, blah. And you go, bro, listen, you talk about shit about these mainstream guys. They can go into any room around this country and light fire.
They can shut it down.
Yeah,
because you got to respect that. You know what I mean? They're proper craftsmen
for sure.
That's amazing, though, that happened, man.
Yeah.
And then I did this competition. And I said to my, I got through to the finals, and I said to myself, if I, oh, I nearly died. I got a tattoo, and it got infected. I got this shitty tattoo on my arm.
Fuck, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And they gave me cellulitis. So I got to take a break from competition. I remember when I did the heat for the competition, I should come out of hospital that day.
Bruh.
I see the video on YouTube, I'm half asleep.
Yeah.
But come out of hospital.
Morphined up.
I still had a plaster on my arm and that. And I got through to the finals and I said to myself, if I do well, I'll quit uni and do comedy. And I go, if I do shit, I'll just go back to uni and I ended up winning it.
Six.
Yeah.
And that's when I became a comedian at 23.
Wow. That's amazing, man. It's mad how important those moments are. Like, to him, it's just, he's just saying something, isn't it? He's fucking off, he's going home, he's not thinking, you know what I mean? But, and like your friend before, the one that put you forward for, you know, like those little moments of encouragement are super important, isn't it?
Mm.
100%. 100%. And because the thing is, like, you know, it's lonely mm-hmm. trying to follow a thing.
Yeah. And especially a one man thing. You're not part of a crew. It's not a band. It's not a fucking.
You're doing it on your own. Yeah. You're turning up on your own as well.
And you know, it's like you got. I remember one comedian told me one time, he goes, you got to be your biggest corner man.
Mm-hmm.
You got to be your corner man in there because it's a fucking boxing match and you got to be your corner man. Yeah. And there's going to be some rounds where you take a bit of a hitting and there's going to be some rounds you're winning, but you always got to go back to your corner man and, you know, and hype yourself back up to get back out there, man. Yeah. So it's a hard road, man.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. It's something I could never do, man. I feel like...
I think I spoke to you two about this before. Yeah. Why not?
It's because of that, man. Like,
I think you do it 100%.
It's the fear, man, of going up.
You guys would be good comedians, though. Like, fully. Like, you mans are funny. Like, you mans got funny bones. Like, you got funny bones about you. You know what I'm saying? I think you'd be bad at first, but I think you could be good.
That's what it is. You know what it is? Yeah, I agree. I'm not going to be like, nah, I'm not funny. Like, because obviously I work in comedy, so I hope I am, you know, and also just naturally, like me and Hugo, we love sort of taking a piss and just having fun and shit. But like, I suppose anything I've ever done, I've always been a part of a group or a crew or collaboration and stuff like that. Having to take it on your own. And you know what? As I get older, I'm more confident like that. But that's why I'm always so fascinated when you're like, yeah, I was like fucking 17, 18 coming up on the stage on my own. You know, at the time where you're learning about yourself, you don't even know your own fucking personality and shit, your own, you know.
Yeah.
I think that's like incredible, man. And
you don't think you would ever do it?
I don't know, man. I think Hugo would be sick. I always say that to him.
Hugo would be sick at it.
Yeah.
I'd just be scared, man. Like, as much as...
Yeah, but you could do your little act, you know, your little short guy. That's
the short guy thing, yeah. The sort of jockey.
Yeah.
That's the whole character.
Yeah. Like, no, just what it is, I turn up in a jockey suit.
Yeah, I'd be funny. I just never reference it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Basically, jockey.
And at the end, go, anyway, I'm off to clock on to my job as a jockey. And then that's
it. Yeah. A little sideline,
yeah,
in that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And have an acoustic guitar.
Yeah, yeah.
But even that, man, that's funny, man. You look, man.
Yeah, let's
know.
Do it. Yeah.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, yo!
Yo!
Ha ha!
Ha 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 ha!
Will everybody shut the fuck up?
Settle down, settle down!
You're in tune to the Chatting Shit Podcast!
UK Stand Up!
The world's greatest!
The best there ever was that ever lived!
Series 2 out now, motherfucker!
Oh gosh!
Ha ha!
Are you ready?
Check it! Check
it! Are you ready?
Check it!
When was the first time you, something like a Big Teddy thing, be like live at the Apollo or something like that?
My first break, TV-wise, was the John Bishop show.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah.
The Empire. That was my first TV break. I think I got that, like, maybe my first year.
Did I see you at Hackney Empire as well? Where?
No, yeah, you saw me at Hackney Empire.
Yeah.
You did see me at Hackney Empire, yeah. The tour,
yeah,
innit?
That's sick.
I remember. You came with your brother,
yeah, innit? Danny Rankin, Decoy. Yeah.
My guy.
Yeah.
Big up, love to him. Nice for my. But yeah, so that was, my first TV break was Hackney Empire. And I remember before I did like 8 shits.
yeah. Nerve shits.
Yeah.
Bro, I was so fucking shook, man. I remember, and like, everyone was killing. And I was just in the back, bro. Pissed, like just terrified, man. And I remember it was like this weird sort of variety show. And I think I was on with like Rita Ora.
Fuck.
Yeah. When was this then? What year would this have been?
I want to say this was over 7 years ago now. Yeah, about 7 years ago.
Okay. Yeah.
And I remember I was just so fresh and I just didn't get it. Like, I remember I walked in and they were like, oh, so what are you wearing? Everyone's wearing a shirt and this. And I was like, yeah, I'm just wearing this white tee.
Yeah.
And they were like, oh, we'll iron it for you. And I'm like, nah, I'm good.
I'm good, man. I'd have to stand in
this Wu-Tang shit.
Yeah. I came in the clothes I was wearing. I was like, I'm wearing this. And they were like, what? You didn't bring extra clothes? I was like, nah. And they're like, well, we'll iron it. And I was like, nah, I'm good. And the woman was like that. Like taking my top, like no, we're like.
I'd love to see you standing there, Rita topless. Roy's getting ready, you're topless, in a steaming t-shirt
with my little doughy belly in that. With my little doughy belly, bro, just standing there, man. But nah, like, I think it kind of played in my favor, though. I remember like there was a club owner, and he said, "Oh, how did it go?" And I was like, "Yeah, I ended up doing well." And he goes, "Yeah, because it's like it's Hackney, it was like in Hackney, and it kind of really had a Hackney audience to it."
Yeah.
It's kind of like it just played to my strengths at that time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, and I did well for that time.
You were on home turf.
I had a home turf in Voyage.
But
yeah, that was my first break.
Sick. And did that feel different then? Did that feel like, to be honest, I don't know what the aim is, you know, when you're doing these stage shows and stuff, is the aim to be like, oh, I could get my stuff further afield and more people seeing it if I get it on telly, sort of thing?
Yeah, it's weird, you know, I'll be honest with you. And this is like, I remember thinking about this the other day. When I first started comedy, my aim was just to earn a teacher salary. Mm-hmm. That's all I wanted. I didn't care about nothing.
Doing as long something as you love and it pays the bills.
Yeah.
And it pays
that's
the bills.
That's what I wanted as well. Yeah.
What I wanted, you know. And then what happened was I remember I had one dream in comedy. Mm. Like, only had one dream in comedy. It wasn't have a TV show. It wasn't even to really tour. Mm. It wasn't do none of that. My one dream in comedy was I wanted to do a show in Amsterdam. That was my only, I swear.
It was a free holiday.
Dream. And it was one particular club called Tumla.
Yeah.
right? It was like owned by comedians. And for some reason, in my head, I put it in my head that Tumla was just like, you know, cool place, and you could go on stage and smoke a cigarette and go to the government. And I don't know why.
Yeah, this different bohemian, like,
I just put that in my head.
Yeah.
And I remember I thought this the first time, it's the guy who's still my agent. And I met him and he goes, all right, what's your dream? Like, what do you want to do? You want to direct? You want to produce? What do you want to do? And I said, man, I just want to do a show in Amsterdam. And I remember they laughed and they were like, okay, yeah, but what else? And I said, I want to do a show in Amsterdam. And then they looked at me and they go, do you know how achievable that is? Achievable. He goes, bro, I'll send the email now. It's not an issue. Like, that's like a very achievable dream. And I was like, bro, that's what I want to do.
Oh, man.
And I did it. And I remember, like, on my last tour, I sold out 2 shows at Tumla.
Wow.
And doing that, doing a show in New York.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To a sold out crowd.
That's amazing.
And maybe LA Belly Room to a sold out crowd. Sick. Few shows, those moments made me more happy than anything else I've achieved in that business.
That's amazing. You know what I'm
saying?
Yeah.
I've had good hires in the business. You know what I'm saying? I've had, you know, I had a TV show, I had this and that, I've been able to play big venues and this and that. But,
yeah, but these are your personal highs, isn't it? Yeah.
Bro, that moment,
yeah,
like, you know, I genuinely, it gave me a moment of solace in terms of like anything that happens now.
Mm.
Like, I can die happy.
It's a bonus, yeah, yeah.
Anything's just a bonus.
I like that your dreams are basically linked to weed and hip-hop. Like New York, mate, and Amsterdam.
Yeah.
100%. Yeah. And I had to come on to fucking Triumph. Yeah. And I remember, like, I came onto it too as well. Like,
bruv, yeah, I remember that. Even all the tunes that are being played before you come on.
I think this was
hard,
though, wasn't it?
Hard, like, yeah, you know.
Bruv, people messing me about my playlist. Listen, I'm telling you now, I'm make a bold statement. In comedy, no one don't have a better playlist than me.
Bro, it's true. Facts, bro.
I'm saying that to me, Romesh Raghunathan.
Yeah.
The shots have been sent, yeah?
Hey, it's true, though.
You've got the verses now.
It's true.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
A bomb atomically. Like, you're there, like, oh, man. They were just waiting for you to come on here and that. It was incredible.
Have I told you, man, about the Wu-Tang interview I did?
I think you told me, but yeah, go on.
Yeah. I did a podcast and we had the Wu-Tang. And it was so bad of an interview, we couldn't release it. And I'm like the biggest Wu-Tang fan and it was so bad, we couldn't release it.
Is it when...
Why, what about
are they just
it was...
being moody?
Yeah. RZA just talk about God for 25 minutes.
Yeah.
And he wouldn't move from the subject.
Fuck's sake. That must be such a tough interview as well.
Yeah. You sort of really want to ask him, like, do you want to do this? Yeah. Not really.
You don't have to do all it, right, man. Ghostface Killer had a fucking toothache. My tooth, son. My tooth. I can't talk. My tooth. I was like, whoa, man. This is so fucking...
Fuck it, man.
I found one of their bags of weed and I was so pissed off with them, I stole it.
That is sick.
I threw it on the floor. I was standing at the back. Yeah. I was on stage when they were performing at Love Box.
Yeah.
And one of them dropped like a big bag of weed, yeah. Man, scooped it up and kept it.
Put your foot over it.
Yeah, I put my foot over it. I was the writing we've been giving back their weed, bro. Give me that
shit. Fuck you, Wu-Tang. I win.
Yeah.
Said it under my breath, but still, they were
dusty.
Yeah.
So how did it happen to sort of move to you having your own TV show, like Hate Thy Neighbor, which isn't, part of it isn't a massive move because you very cleverly used your stand-up throughout. So that was part of your identity as a stand-up. But then you went all Louis Farouk on him and shit, man. So
yeah,
that,
fully.
Yeah.
How did that come about, bro?
I always loved docs.
Yeah.
I always just loved, like, I think Louis Farouk, just like, so even though he's highly rated, he's underrated for how good he is.
Psychologist, man.
Yeah. Mm. Just like, I mean, cause I remember I watched one film with him and it's someone who has done films. I watched a film and I was like, him to know that is so intelligent that I would have fucked up. He was talking to this woman who had anorexia.
Mm.
And she says to him, do you think I look skinny? And he goes, I'm not going to answer that. Say you're skinny and you won't believe me. And I say you look normal. I think you look fat. And it's just, and she went, yeah, you're right. And that's because I would have fucked up and been like, no, you skinny bitch. Like, I would have.
No, you look good. You look good.
Yeah. Or I would have said you look good. I would have fucked that up. But he's so, like, you know.
And also,
and
he's
shit,
making
like,
sure that he stays biased within his subject as well.
Yeah.
Because
that's
going to sway it either way.
Yeah,
man.
And that's so hard to do. Like, as a human, it's so hard to let things play out without getting involved. And I think you did such an amazing job with that. Like, I remember at the time I messaged you, man. It was like you studied Louis, man, because the inner Louis was coming out,
Nick Broomfield.
Yeah. Amazing, yeah.
The one Nick Broomfield bit that really influenced me was it's when he's interviewed. I don't know if you've seen it. It's called The Driver, His Wife and the Leader, where he's basically interviewing a guy who's the leader of the South African apartheid movement.
I ain't seen that.
Like a pro apartheid. He's like a real racist South African guy. And there's a bit where they're interviewing, they want to do an interview with him, but he keeps on standing them up. Mm. So then they come late one time, 5 minutes, and he's screaming at them. He's like, you come late 5 minutes? What was you doing? And then they're dumb at this point. So they're just like, I was drinking cups of tea, innit?
Yeah.
And they just kept on saying it. And he was like, cups of tea? Cups of tea? And he kept saying, yeah, we're just having a cup of tea. Do you want a cup of tea? Like, and they just kept on winding him up. And I remember I sort of remembered that when I did, there was a bit where I was interviewing the Ku Klux Klan.
Yeah.
And they didn't want me to come on the thing. And some guy walked over to me and he was trying to be all tough and that. He was like, hey, I'll come here. And I was like, but what happens if I do?
Yeah.
And then he just kind of broke and he kind of goes, just please.
Yeah.
I just kept saying, but what's going to happen?
Yeah. Yeah,
he's just you're not gonna hurt you, but you're just gonna ruin it for us. Yeah. It was kind of keep that energy of just, you know, keep on pushing the line.
Yeah, that's what I loved about it though. It was like a Louis Theroux that would maybe smack someone up.
Yeah, because it did get tasty.
Because the thing is, at the end of the day, yeah, if you're Louis Theroux is a white guy, you know what I mean. If you are in a place where you literally are the enemy,
yeah.
That's a next stage of having to keep your cool.
Yeah, it really changes the whole like dynamic. Yeah. And you kind of have to, it's like people ask me all the time, the biggest question I get is how do you deal with it? Or how could you just chill and listen to it? And it's like a lot of it is I had to become a character.
Yeah.
I couldn't be myself. Yeah. I had to be a character and I had to, you know, switch off and do a job.
Yeah. Yeah.
A lot of it is just being a character and being curious as opposed to being offended and really stepping outside of what I am. And that's hard. And that's why I stopped doing it, you know, like it will never, you know, newsflash, it will never come back on.
Yeah.
Because I kind of, it sent me a bit mad because I stopped being myself for 2 years. Mm. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. I had to become a character for 2 years and it fucks with your head for to go in that long. But then as well is everyone thinks that's who you are and that's how you react and that's, you know what I'm saying? Because in my natural life, I'm not as calm and I'm not as, you know what I'm saying?
I know, like, but I, from an outsider watching it, I don't ever think, oh my God, he's selling out because he's not reacting in a certain way. You've got a job to do. And actually, I think you did an amazing job. And I think the piece of work is amazing. And we spoke about this before. It's only you personally that can see that and feel that, I guess. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because you even mentioned it in your stand-up as well, didn't you?
Yeah. I spoke about it. And I mean, in the tours, and I speak about my disdain of the show, really.
Yeah.
I'm being, I speak about it openly, you know.
Yeah.
You know, and it was sort of like, I don't know how deep you want to get into it, but it's like a weird thing. It sounded like it took me a long time to really get over. And it's sort of been, you know, I made that show at 24. I'm nearly 30 now. It's a long time. Mm-hmm. I'm saying, because it's like a year to film, then a year to edit. And then, so it came out later, but I filmed it. I was like 20, 24, turning 25 when I made it.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it's sort of, and having that at that age, it's weird. It's weird when something you're not happy with is one of the defining things of what's propelled you, your career.
Yeah. What you're known as.
Well, yeah, that's how I saw you on a few bits and bobs, and that's how I really got into you is through that.
Mm.
That's why I'm kind of, I guess, biased to it, because I feel like it's not as if the work that you created of that is brilliant. Do you know what I'm saying? But
yeah.
It's not until afterwards when you said about something about and I really understood when you said it live. You're talking about the fact that these are essentially like the cartoon characters' versions of racist and stuff like that. Like the real racism is happening all the time, like in little institutional racism. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And that's another thing as well is this. You know, I think the show kind of, you know, highlighted subsectors, and it wasn't the, because they're not really the issue.
No.
You know what I'm saying? The issue, even other racist people go, oh, they're fine.
Yeah.
That's too far.
Yeah, too much.
But yeah, it was a fucking mad time, man. Like, it was just like, I look at some of the stuff I did back then that you couldn't pay me enough money to do that. I was going white power music festivals, no security.
Yeah. I know, yeah, crazy.
And like everyone, and there was like times where people had guns and they're mad at us, but they got guns. It's just mad. Over didn't even hit the camera, like, you know what I'm saying? I went to like some of the worst like ends in America. I went to like Detroit and Atlanta, and you know, I remember one time we're in the car, and this didn't make it on screen, but I'm in the car and it's me, a Nazi, and a Jewish cameraman, right? Okay. We're driving around Detroit, and I remember we pulled up outside this house in Detroit, and there's about like 20 dudes outside this house, and it's pitch black nighttime, right? And we're in it's a bad fucking place, right, man.
It's not a good place to be at night.
You don't want to be there. We're in this car, and it's only us and the rest of the crew in the van. And our camera guy at the time, he's a lovely guy, but he was worthless about some shit. And we're standing there, and all the guys was looking at us outside the house. And I remember the Nazi and me were sitting there, and the Nazi was like, yo, we should like move, but we're both not trying to look like. So we're like, yeah, whatever. We'll sit here all night. We don't care. Yeah. And then we drove off, and the cameraman was like, I need another shot. You need to drive back. And we're like, fuck. But we both, so we drive back now. And the Nazi, like, look, they think this is a drive-by.
Oh, shit. Yeah, back. Of course.
One guy in the house. One guy's gone, and he's in the house now. And another guy's just pulled up his trousers. Oh, and you can see the L of his gun.
No way.
And the other guy looks at us and just does this.
Nah, shit.
We're just like, fuck.
Like, let's go.
All the crew are sitting behind us like, fucking drive, man. And my camera guy's like, I need to get some better lighting.
Yeah. Could you ask them to turn their living room lights on?
No, they weren't there. Can you turn the living room lights on? Because, you know, there's good taste.
Yeah.
And it's America, so like, they will just shoot you. It's not like here where they might just threaten and they've got to check if it's definitely real. They're just going
to
do it.
I remember when we went to this one place in Atlanta, and this was bad. This is a bad spot in Atlanta, man. And we're chilling, and we're walking down, and we're with this activist, and people are coming out of their houses screaming, what the fuck's going on? What? Who's this? Who that? And then the guy's like, the activist is like, no, Black Lives Matter. No, it's cool. And you see dudes like coming out their house angry, and they just go back in the house. And you're looking down the side streets, and it's like a movie. It's just dudes sitting on like Cadillacs. Shirt off, covered in tats. And I was like, yo, this is a bad spot. And I said to the guy, what would happen to the crew if you weren't here? And he goes, mate, you ain't leaving with them cameras, man.
Yeah.
And he goes, since you came on the block, someone phones, everyone knows you here. And I go, oh, what would happen if I came by myself? And he goes, I'll be honest with you, like, you look Arab and they think you own one of the corner shops. They'll be like, oh, man, that's just Aki, man. Leave Aki. He's at the corner shop, man. Don't worry about him. He goes, now, you be straight. He goes, like, you know what I mean? You good. Like, they think you just like Muslim at the corner shop. Like, don't worry about you. But he goes, you white crew? Nah, but they ain't leaving with their cameras.
You felt great deep down, innit? Like,
I'm
fucking
good.
White devils, like, fuck off.
Yeah, mate.
I'm good here.
When they start robbing them, I'll be turning around robbing them too. Yeah. I'm quiet.
And then telling him that I've actually stole Wu-Tang's weed before.
Fucking pussyos. Am I right?
I actually saw Capadonna skunk.
Yeah.
You're not affiliated, are you? No. Wondering how it all connects.
You're not the bees, are you? No.
Yeah. Oh, man. So what does the future hold, bro? You're talking about writing scripts. Is this for like a sitcom sort of stuff?
Yeah, sort of like comedy drama team.
Yeah.
I'm working on right now. I've got a little mockumentary thing I'm doing.
How's that been converting from, you know, you obviously write your own stuff on your own, but with stuff like this, is it a little bit more collaborative? Is it a bit different?
Well, the first one I'm writing it myself, and that's just purely on me, and that's fucking hard, man. Mm-hmm. It's so different to writing stand-up, right?
Yeah.
saying, like, I got so much respect for writers, bruv, because that shit is hard, man, to kind of narratively put down a thing and it just be of a conversation. Like, that shit is so hard, bruv, like, to guide an interesting conversation and yet has to be under the guide, under structure, and it's just hard.
Yeah.
And the other stuff, I'll probably look to collaborate, because it's just, you know, I think it's just, I sort of find it, even though I'm used, in terms of collaboration, I had to really let go of ego.
Yeah.
When it's like stand up. And I was so kind of, and I'll be honest with you, man, like, I was so terrified of collaboration because it was so, I'm used to doing it what I want to do and say what I want to say.
100%. That's why I ask, because there's so many comedians, and that's the beauty of it. You can write your own stuff. No one's telling you what to do. No notes. You get to go deliver it, and then you see what how the people react. Yeah. Whereas writing a sitcom or comedy or whatever is a completely different ball game. And like even you're saying the stuff you're writing on your own, there's going to be a point where people come in with notes and shit. You know, it's going to be.
Yep.
So it is a humbling experience for the ego.
But it's good though. Yeah. I think it's good because, you know, I had a conversation about the thing I was writing. Mm-hmm. Had a conversation with someone about it, and them sort of asking questions and sort of saying, well, why, and is that needed, and this and that, it fucking made it better, man.
Of course,
you know, even if I kept it the same, with conviction. I think that's important, because it, you know, I think it's good when people question you about it and they get like, but why is it this way? And with stand up, I'm so used to no one ever questioning me.
Exactly.
Wherever the fuck I want, and you know, no one can't, you know, even when you really, when it comes to doing stand up on TV, the most they will ask you is, hey, can you not say this word? Can you not say cunt, because we've only got two cunts?
Yeah.
I remember that, the funniest one, when I did Live the Apollo, I think the first time, I had this whole routine about the pussy economics. Right. And I remember, like, the guy who books it, and he's a good dude too, man. He's a really good dude. And he said to me, we had a negotiation. And he goes, all right, Jamali, listen, here's your set. Love the pussy joke. Listen, if we're going to say pussy that many times, you gotta give me back some fucks. And I said, all right, I'll give you some fucks, but you gotta give me a shit. And he goes, I'll give you a shit, just no cunts. That was a real serious conversation we had, where it's just like, we're negotiating what swears I can say. And he goes, listen, you can have asses all day.
Yeah.
I'll give you arse. You can have your ass, mate, but you cannot have 10 pussies, all right?
We've been there, man.
He goes, I'll even give you a bastard, but you cannot have a cunt.
You're like, bastard, is that even a swear? Yeah, it is. Yeah, technically. Yeah.
Really? It was like an old word.
Yes, it's a weird kind of thing, you know, having to justify your vision, but it's healthy, and I'm actually enjoying it, man.
Yeah.
It's sort of like, I think it's sort of a growing thing, and
For sure.
And it's sort of trying to move my creativity and tell different stories and that.
Yeah.
And, you know what I'm saying? I'm sort of write from a different perspective, not just write from what I think. How would this person react? Or how would this do it? And, you know, I'm enjoying it, man. Like, I can't complain.
Yeah, that's sick, man. That's amazing. And how about live? Obviously, it's a funny time now, but is there anything on the horizon?
I'm on tour next year, man.
Sick.
Yeah, I'm on tour in 2020. It will be 2022. I'm going back on tour. Sick. I'll be doing England, Europe, and maybe some American dates. I might try and do America this year if shit clears up a little
bit. Yeah, amazing. Yeah, sick.
Why not?
I mean,
there's parts of it wide open.
Yeah.
Texas, Florida, you'd be fine.
Yeah, mate.
Yeah.
Just they're open. I don't give a shit.
Yeah.
The sandwich. What's your favorite sandwich?
So we're coming towards the end of the show. A question we ask all of our guests, which I feel is very important because it says a lot about you, is what's your favorite sandwich?
Oh.
Are you a sandwich guy?
I fuck with a sandwich.
Okay, we got to do a top three then.
Oh, top three. Okay.
Yeah.
Do you know what? I'm going to do one. They're very different sandwiches, but I can't necessarily pick between the two right this second because there's so many similarities and I'm still messing with it in my head. That's the chopped cheese and the Philly cheesesteak.
I've never tried one, man.
Yeah, same.
Never tried the Philly or chopped.
So hold on. A chopped cheese is from a bodega in New York, right?
Yeah, you're from Hardee's.
Okay.
It's like a cheeseburger. They season and they chop up and they break it up into like,
I've never had that.
And they break it up and they put it with onions and
sounds banging.
Philly cheesesteak is such a legit fucking sandwich. It's
and
like
just sliced up steak in it, yeah.
Sliced up ribs, that's ribs, steak and with cheese whiz. Oof. I would go with the, I like that French dip with the roast beef.
Fire, fucking hell, yeah.
No, that French dip with a roast beef. You know what my number one is? I'm real with you. A peanut butter sandwich with crunchy peanuts.
Wow, just peanut butter?
Just peanut butter. I was raised on peanut butter sandwiches, man.
Yeah, I was.
Just because I travel now and I can eat fancy sandwiches, it don't mean that.
I appreciate
a peanut butter sandwich with a pack of Watsons.
Right, And what are we saying white, just cheap white bread?
Cheap white bread and you get Skippy's peanut butter crunchy.
Okay.
Yeah.
On some white bread and you have a little bit of Watsits. You might even sprinkle some Watsits in the sandwich.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Okay. Okay. I respect that because your first two were some international shit.
Yeah.
So then you brought it back home. Yeah.
They sounded fine.
And then I'll say a little sideline sandwich that's not really a sandwich is a patty and cocoa bread, which technically is a sandwich, but not a sandwich.
I've never had a patty and cocoa bread.
Fucking nice.
Wow. Man. I need to try that, man. Sure. Sit. Yeah. All right, cool. That's a strong Selecki. And finally, because the only reason people listen to this podcast is because of me and Hugo, really. So we are. No one can see, but Jamali just went, fair enough.
All I'm going to say is, man, I know you both personally. Yeah. Took you 2 seasons to get me on. I'm just saying. You know, I kind of influenced the podcast. And
yeah, you did.
Season one wasn't a, all right, that's cool. Have Rude Kid on. Yeah. We've done a charity event for you guys.
Hey, and just so you know, we did a massive intro for you where we mentioned that you are the only reason we're doing this podcast as well. So the people know as well, do you know what I mean?
They know.
Listen, brother, man, you know I do it.
No, I appreciate it, man. So this last bit, as I say, because it is about us mainly, is we ask all the guests to ask us 3 questions each.
The three questions.
So arrogant, isn't it?
Yeah, that is very arrogant.
Yeah.
Anytime to prepare.
Yeah, that's the best bit.
No, cause I would have done the stand-up one for you guys, but obviously you already gave me the fucking answer.
Yeah, now you're like, what's your favourite colour sort of section? Your brain.
Yeah. Do you know what? What is, if you only had one trainer that you can wear for the rest of your life, what trainer would that be? Have you already had that?
No, but I love this question because I feel confident about the answer. That's why I was violently nodding.
It's a tough one.
Yeah, and I'm going to give the pretentious part of the culture sort of way of saying it. 110s.
Come on.
Which only us three know what we're talking about, but to the little shit munchers out there, that's an Air Max 95.
Come on.
Because for me, it's just like the most comfortable trainer that's got some of my favourite colourways. And it's essentially a boot as well. I've climbed mountains with that shit. In France, I climbed a mountain. Kieran had hiking boots. I had triple black Air Max 95s and he'd done me.
It was the triple black that got you up this.
Yeah, exactly. The burglar trainer, the number one burglar.
Yeah. And you were ready to burgle a house.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was up there with energy, just like ready to jump in a window. Yeah. What about you, Hugo?
Tough. It's between two.
Don't use my answer.
The Air Max 1. Or the 95, and I would say that the 95, because like what you said, there's loads of colorways, etc. But also it's just the British trainer. I feel we rep that trainer the hardest.
Yeah, because even when you went America, Hugo, weren't they like gassed over your crit?
Yeah, they didn't understand how I had them, where I got them from.
You're like JD, bro. No, it's easy.
Yeah, but it's massive. Like, rappers reference the 95 all the time. So I just thought it'd be common, but it's not.
Yeah, they slap on the Air Maxes, bro. Because it used to be back in the day, it's like someone would have some sick reps and they're like, my uncle went America.
Yeah.
My second question is, what's your favorite shit film? What's your favorite film that you know is shit, but can't help but love it?
Okay. Because it's hard for me because I'm so much in such a film buff, you see.
All of a sudden. Yeah. The film buff. I'm trying to think of a shit good film.
Does Karate Kid count?
Yeah, Karate Kid's a shit film.
Yeah, that really counts because to me that's an amazing film.
Yeah, it's a pretty shit film.
Okay, sick. So that is, I can watch that over and over again, man. Yeah. Hugo, you've got bare shit films that you love. Didn't you love Crank?
No.
And that's Dan. Dan loves
Crank. I love Crank. When I first saw Crank 1, I was like, this film's good, you know? And then I saw something about it. Like, what the fuck
is
this?
That is that decoy with me. He's like, you need to watch Crank, bro. It's incredible.
hard. Everything had to be hard. I'd say Ninja Turtles 1.
Oh, that's hard though, man. Yeah.
But it's shit though. If you watch it now, it is shit, but it's just so
Ninja
nostalgic.
Turtles 2 was harder because they're like in the underground in New York with like rollerbladers with like Mohicans and shit. And I used to think, right, they're proper. That, like back then is what I imagined what Rude Boys looked like. Guys in cut off jean jackets and fingerless gloves and shit.
My one's Eddie Murphy, Golden Child.
Oh,
that's a sick film.
That is hard though, man.
It's so shit, yeah? The little kid touches someone through the bars and that, like, that's the shit. Fucking hell, I love that.
But when I was younger, I found it quite scary. Like, I was like, oh, it's quite dark side.
Yeah.
My third question is, if there was a song that was the soundtrack of your life, what would it be?
Ooh, fucking hell, that's a really good question.
Your youth, what's the soundtrack of your youth? Fuck it.
Okay, cool. Okay, I'm picking an era, and it would be from like 17 to 26, and it would have been Raekwon, Incarcerated Scarfaces.
Mm.
Okay,
big tune.
That's to this day, I'll play that and fantasize about freestyling over it and pretend that I've released that.
Yeah. You know about that, isn't it? You're sitting there, you're like, going, only if this was me. Yeah, I've done that, bro.
Yeah.
I hear that, bro. Bro, I still do that shit to this day, bro. I'll hear like a bad tune. Yeah. I'm like, man, I wish I rap this song, man.
I feel like I'd really suit rapping over this.
Yeah, man. I see myself performing it live on stage. And all that.
I'd say mine, I don't know if it was the soundtrack of my youth, but there's a Jay Dilla tune called Won't Do. And since I heard that tune till now, it never gets skipped. It's always on my playlist. It's not even the lyrics, it's just the beat is so sick. And it's the same sample as Ice Cube, It Was a Good Day, but it's like the Dilla flip.
I flipped it. It's sick.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
What about you, Jamali?
Oh man, fuck.
A hard question, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a hard question. I would say it sounds dated now, but I just remember that being such a poignant part of my youth was Lethal B Pow.
Yeah.
I remember being at the under 16s where that was plastered on a piece of paper. Yeah. Do not hear.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing people smash toilets, and I was there at carnival when I saw the police were trying to shut down Rampage or somewhere, whatever the fuck.
Yeah.
People just lost their fucking minds, man.
Yeah, that's,
you know what I'm saying? It was like one of those energy songs.
Yeah, there was gunshots in the rave to that one, innit?
Yeah.
And I would say Vic Vaughn, Let Me Watch.
Ooh, yeah.
There was something about that song. I just remember hearing that when I was really young and just resonating with me.
Yeah.
Youthful ignorance in love.
Hey, listen, man, on that note, brother, thank you so much for coming on, man. It's been a sick chat.
Anytime.
Yeah, man.
Thank you so much.
Appreciate it.
And the most important question, isn't it?
Oh fuck, yeah. The most important question. Are you now our new best friend?
One of you, but I'm not going to tell you which one.
Okay, then. Fucking
hell. I knew it.
Yeah.
I'm joking. Of course. We are best friends.
Yeah, well, I quite like that answer because in my mind it was me because I've got your number. We chat.
Yeah. That's all right. It's all right.
Thank you, brother. Thanks very much for your time, bro. Really appreciate it, man.
Yeah, thank you, man.
Thanks for having me, bro.
This is the outro. See you later. And good luck. Stay lucky, boy. Stay lucky, boy.
Oh gosh, Daddy Hugo, so you're wicked and you're fine. Mad all the wine. Still your common lyrics and you shine all the time.
Thank you.
Yeah. And that's how you do an outro. Yeah.
Yeah.
Big up Jamali.
Mm.
Thank you for blessing us with your time. It was an amazing conversation. And I'm buzzing out my mind off. I'm coming up. What about you?
I'm coming.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
Bucket
covered.
Loads.
Covered in it.
Yeah. And what's your general feeling?
Sort of sticky and warm.
No, come on. That's, you know, mentally.
Oh, from the Jamali.
Yeah.
Inspired, from the Jamali. Man. He's inspirational.
Yeah.
He's a G, man. I feel like whenever we've had the pleasure of working with him, it's always been easy, natural vibe. And he's
sure.
good energy. Good egg, man. Good energy.
He's a good brother. And I've already texted him and we're going to go for a walk next week. So
nice.
Come down if you like.
I'll message Jamali.
We don't need to do it separately. We can just...
No. Okay. It's just,
you didn't say anything. You just said nah.
Yeah.
You just said yeah then. There's no excuse.
Yeah, yeah. I'm waiting. No, it's just... Huh? Big up Jamali.
Yeah, big up Jamali,
man. I'll call you,
Up Hugo. Big up the little thing we do as well, where Hugo pretends to hate me. It's definitely not true, so don't worry about it, guys, because I've had a lot of messages worrying about our relationship. What are you doing?
No, just packing up.
Okay. There's no need to pack up. We can still have a warm down afterwards.
No, I'm just...
Me, you, and Rupert chit-chat for a bit.
I'm on Google.
Online solitaire, share the screens. Okay, anyway. Yeah, you're on Google now. I can see your white on your face from the screen, so you're not even listening or watching me anymore. So see you later. Hello, see you later.
Huh?
I said see you later.
Oh, yeah, see you, man.
See ya. And now off screen, we're best mates still. I'll say it even BTS at least.
I'm back now.
Yeah.
No. Should I stop this?
Stop.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Also, we forgot to say that you lot must like and subscribe as well, apparently.
Yeah. Just click on it. It's real easy.
Lift your finger, drop it when you see the like or subscribe. Done. All right? Yeah.
Done.
Also, follow us on Instagram and our new Twitch account, because we'll be doing live episodes on Twitch every now and then. So keep an eye out.
Mm-hmm.
Both of them are the Chatting Shit Podcast. That's the Chatting Shit Podcast. All right? So follow us on both of them. And also, if you've got any questions, anything you want us to talk about, hit us up on the email. That's chattingshit1@gmail.com. Nice one.
Sweet.
Yeah?
Yeah.
See you later.
See ya.
Hey, yo! Will everyone shut the fuck up? I want to give a crazy, stupid, dope fly shout out to everyone involved in this podcast.
No, fuck that. Who's the brain that produces this show, man?
Man like Rupert Magendie.
And who's the audio editor?
James Torrance, check
it. House. Who's the video editor?
Ha ha, James Lord.
And who does all the illustrations?
It's Alison the Ink.
Mad on the visuals, bruh.
Shout out all the posse down at ACAS Laboratory. Hip hop, hip hop. Am I right, hustler?
You're not wrong, Playboy Valentino.